This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. Our radio show is heard on Pacifica stations nationwide, and our TV show can be viewed on Free Speech TV and on our website. In early March, a story broke that rocked the foundation of the Marine Corps when it was revealed that thousands of U.S. Marines were sharing nude photos of their female colleagues in a secret Facebook group. That group, calling itself Marines United, has now been outed, but many of its members have gone on to join other online groups to continue the photo sharing. Many of the women whose photos were being shared were active duty soldiers and were being identified by their names, locations, and ranks. The scandal is part of a culture in the U.S. military that encourages the exploitation of women and often manifests itself as sexual assault and rape. Rape in the military is far more common than in the general public. Now, one survivor of multiple sexual assaults in the military has written a book about her experiences. My guest is Lynn K. Hall. She's a crisis counselor and an advocate for survivors, currently on the board of directors for Boulder, Colorado's Rape Crisis Center. And her book is called Caged Eyes, an Air Force cadet's story of rape and resilience. It is the first full-length memoir account of rape in the U.S. military. Welcome to the program, Lynn.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks so much for joining us. So first, let me just clarify for our audience the assaults that took place on you, the assaults that you suffered were while you were at the Air Force Academy as a cadet in Colorado Springs, Colorado?
Correct.
And this, it was a hard book to read, I have to admit, of course. And I think that was the point for you to put out the story of what happened to you, despite the fact that it's extremely uncomfortable, it's extremely hard because it's happening. Can you tell us, first of all, what drove you to join the Air Force Academy? What was it that you think you were looking for when you joined it, just to give us a sense of how your expectations when you got there were dashed?
Yeah, the reason I wanted to join the Air Force and specifically become an officer in the Air Force was to become a pilot. I just was fascinated with the sky and aviation. And so that was my initial love. But I think it was greater than that too. I wanted to join something that was bigger than myself. I liked the idea of the camaraderie and the idea of having a brothers and sisters in arms.
So you got there and you, of course, found, like I think many people do, that it's extremely hard, right? Boot camp is no joke. And you right. describe that in your book as well. I mean, that too was hard for me, even though, you know, wasn't the most extraordinary part of the book. But tell us about that, the manner, what it feels like when you first join as a cadet, because I do think that that is part of the story, the kind of demand for complete obedience.
Yes, you you're exactly right. It's a demand for complete obedience. And, you know, at the Air Force Academy, they control all aspects of your life. So you have very little contact with the outside world. They control everything about your day down to how many times you chew your food. And that's specific to the military academies.
Down to how many times you chew your food?
Correct. They count. They count. And they don't let you chew more than 7 times.
Why?
Well, the idea behind it is to build discipline and attention to details. And I do understand, you know, as officers in the military, that those are desirable attributes. However, I think the problem is when the people training these 18-year-old cadets are only a few years older. And that's what's specifically different about the military academies than the rest of the military, is that it's 20, 21-year-olds who are implementing this training. And so this line between what is, you know, supposed to be happening, you know, for instance, counting chews, and, you know, unsanctioned hazings becomes really blurred.
Now, the experiences you had were happened during your training. They didn't happen during actually serving in the military or being in active duty, right? This was just the training part of it.
Right. This was just the training, you know, my initial experiences with the Air Force.
So I understand it was 3 different men that over various periods assaulted you. These were all men that you personally knew and had relationships with, right? I mean, and I think this is very consistent with how we see rape and sexual assault in the general public, that it's often somebody that you know very well, sometimes even an intimate partner, but it's usually not strangers that assault women.
Right, right. And especially two of the men I knew very, very well, those two were not cadets. The third man, however, was a cadet. He was a senior cadet at the Air Force Academy, and I wanted to join the Aero Club so I could fly their planes on weekends. I had my private pilot's license, and he offered to help me study for the exams I would need to take. And he, so I didn't know him quite as well, but I still knew him, and I just thought he was, you know, trying to help me.
Were there other women that, as far as you know, in your academy that had similar experiences to you? Was this kind of an open secret?
It wasn't an open secret initially when I was there. My first year there, I had no idea that other women were experiencing sexual violence as well. That was something I couldn't even imagine. Because I had so much blame for myself, for, you know, those usual victim blaming things. I put myself in those situations. I was too weak, et cetera, et cetera. I couldn't understand that there were many perpetrators at the Air Force Academy and that they were assaulting other women there as well. When I realized that, it was a complete paradigm shift, mentally and emotionally. And that's when I started to connect with these other women who had all experienced rapes as well.
Lynn, you were very young and you were very vulnerable. Do you feel that that was part of the sort of framework within which these sexual assaults happen? I mean, obviously, rape is about power more than anything else, right?
Right. Right. And it absolutely was part of those dynamics. You know, the sexual abuse I experienced, you know, that perpetrator took advantage of my vulnerabilities. But, you know, the point I would argue is that the military has a certain appeal to young teenagers who come from situations that they would like to escape. Yeah. You know, that's why they advertise in the way they do in these major promotional campaigns. You know, come join the military, be an army of one, join your brothers and sisters in arms, you know, be all that you can be. Those sorts of messages, you know, I think appeal to a lot of kids who want to rise up over their childhoods. So I think a lot of 18-year-olds enter the military coming from vulnerable backgrounds.
And that was true for you as well? You talk particularly about your mother in the book?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I came from a difficult childhood. My mother was very supportive of me in some ways, and in other ways, you know, there was a lot of emotional abuse going on. Yeah, so it was definitely, I wanted to escape that childhood.
And then in at least one or two of the cases of the perpetrators in your sexual abuse and assaults, they were by men who had become father figures to you. Can you,
right.
Can you put that into context as well?
Right. So the sexual abuse I experienced as a 17-year-old headed into the Air Force Academy was perpetrated by a man who was my flight instructor. And then he became much more in terms of a father figure, because my own father was states away. I never saw him. He was absent from my life. So I really needed a lot as that young girl. And he became part of the family. So, yes, I was very vulnerable, and he took advantage of that.
So the let's also talk about how, unfortunately, so many rape victims don't or end up blaming themselves for what has happened to them, right? And that's a big part of what we have in society. Society tells us these or pressures us into feeling like it was our fault. Did you go through any of that sort of self-blame or being unable to understand and trying to process what had happened to you because you were so young and probably also kind of geographically and personally isolated?
Yes, and I definitely went through all of that. And that's the reason why I never told anybody in all of these situations. I just thought that these were secrets I would take with me to my grave. I truly thought it was my fault. So I was deeply, deeply ashamed. Mm. It wasn't until much later that I realized that that is unfortunately the all too common response to sexual violence. I write about in my book how at one point I met a woman who was raped by her brother, who was a Marine, her older brother.
Wow.
And she was 3 years old when these rapes began, and she still blamed herself. I think the point where a three-year-old blames herself for being raped, we can clearly point to culture as part of this problem, a huge part of this problem. That's what I would call rape culture.
Hmm. And in the military in particular, it's sometimes the lengthy silence of rape victims that's used as a weapon against them, right? That higher up say, well, how come you didn't come out and speak up about this when it happened? Because it takes often a long time for people to process what's happened to them and get the courage to speak out. When they do speak out, they are sometimes even victimized by the very people that they're reporting to.
Right. So there's so many barriers to reporting. And this first, what you're talking about is the shame piece or the, not even realizing it's something that you should report. And then after you sort of process all of that, then you maybe realize, a soldier maybe realizes that if she or he reports, you may be the one punished. So it's no wonder really that people don't make more reports.
Now, in terms of what happened to you, the story that you write, and I should again remind our audience, is the first full-length memoir account of rape in the military. Why did you feel this was important for you to tell your story? And, just reading it was so difficult, and I can only imagine writing it was more difficult. But it's very detailed, and you just lay it all out there in a way that is admirable that you've done that. Why did you do that?
Yeah, that's a question I've asked myself every day. What drove me to write this book? Because it has been really hard for me. As you say, it's hard for readers. It's been hard for me as well. My own trauma was very difficult to process and to deal with. But I think what's even more difficult is the realization how many other people go through just what I did. And that's what drove me to tell this story. It makes me very sad here in 2017, more than 15 years after my sexual assaults, to hear these stories continuing within the military. Like you mentioned at the beginning of the segment, this Marine photo scandal. And now as a writer, I'm hearing from readers from all branches of the service telling me their stories. So it is still happening, and that's what drove me to write the story.
So has the publication of the book and just your speaking out in general found people resulted in people contacting you and saying, thank you so much for writing this. It gave me the courage to come out and tell my own story.
Yes.
Of course, that's one of the biggest reasons to do this, right?
Exactly. I've heard from so many women, especially survivors, who have written to me and said, thank you for writing this book. Such and such happened to me. It's very similar stories. A lot of times women say that they never told anybody for a number of years, or maybe they've never told anybody at all. Or perhaps they did tell and they did report and they were punished for it and really regret that decision. The other thing that's really interesting is that I've heard from a number of men in the military, men who aren't survivors of sexual violence, who have thanked me for writing the book, because they better understand the issues around sexual violence and sexual harassment. And like one man said, he read my book even though it was difficult because he felt like he had a duty to witness. And I think that's pretty awesome. I don't just want to reach survivors. I want to reach people who can help influence culture.
What happened when you tried to report what had happened to you? How was it met?
The first time I reported sexual abuse from that perpetrator who was a father figure, I was blamed and told that I could have stopped the abuse. And I was punished for it.
In what way were you punished?
Well, this was in an organization called Civil Air Patrol, which I was in right before I became a cadet at the Air Force Academy. And I was effectively kicked out of the organization. I could no longer be a cadet within the program because they said I was complicit in the abuse.
So complicit when I was, in the abuse?
Yes. Wow. I should have been able to stop it, yeah. Is verbatim what they said in writing.
And then it happened. So then you did you report or attempt to report the second assault? And if so, what happened to that?
Right. So when I was raped as a cadet at the Air Force Academy, there was no way I was going to report it. I couldn't risk losing my career, which already at the age of 18, I had worked years to achieve. All through high school, I had worked towards that end. There's no way I was going to report that assault. So unfortunately that had dire health consequences for me, which I describe in the book. And also, that perpetrator continued to rape other women.
Right. I mean, you basically left a health issue untreated out of fear that I understand impacts you very seriously even today.
Right. Right. As a result of that rape, I contracted herpes from the perpetrator, and that virus went into my nervous system and caused meningitis and eventually encephalitis. And even then, I was unwilling, unable, I don't know what the right verb is, to tell somebody what had happened. Eventually, I did, but that was months later, and it was sort of too late in terms of getting the best treatment for my medical situation. So I still have chronic pain.
Wow. So did you eventually end your career in the military? And how much of that had to do with the assaults that you suffered?
It was 100% because of the assaults. And because of the chronic pain I had, the military made the decision to give me a medical discharge, and that was the right decision because I was really struggling with these this constant headache I have.
So do you feel, and I sort of mentioned this at the beginning of our conversation, do you feel that the culture of the military, that demand for strict discipline, that preying on vulnerable individuals, all of that feeds into or creates an atmosphere that encourages sexual assault of women?
Yeah. So, you know, unfortunately, like I sort of said at the beginning, it's hard for example, at the Air Force Academy, for cadets to tell the difference between appropriate training, which does control every aspect of a new cadet's life, and hazing. And when I explain this, this is sort of, people are becoming incredulous, or it's hard for people to believe, but the line between what is appropriate and then what turns into sexual harassment of women, name calling of women, or treating women differently than the men, and then, you know, full on harassment of certain individuals, and then ultimately assault, it becomes really hard to distinguish those lines. And it's almost like a frog, you know, the adage about the frog being boiled, where women just put up with things and put up with things and put up with things until suddenly they find themselves the victim of sexual assault.
Finally, can you explain the title of your book, Caged Eyes? Lynn, what does that mean?
Yeah, Caged Eyes is the reference. First-year cadets are not allowed to look anywhere other than a point straight in front of their faces. And that's called caging your eyes. It became a metaphor as I wrote about the strict control of my life as a first-year cadet, and then also the denial that I experienced. Mm-hmm.
Well, Lynn, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. Well, actually, before we end, tell me what your life is like today. I mean, aside from the chronic pain you're still suffering, you're a crisis counselor yourself. Do you feel like you've been able to turn a very difficult start to your adult life into something positive?
I do. I mean, I think it's a privilege to work with other survivors. I'm not currently a counselor at this moment, but I have been in the past. I've been taking a break as I've put this book out into the world. And it's a privilege now to be in this position where other survivors are reaching out to me because they've read this memoir. So I'm proud and also grateful to be in this position where, yes, I have turned something into, a really horrible experience into something positive. But I also feel so passionately for what continues to go on in the military. And I just hope I can be part of that conversation and ultimately some change.
Certainly, there's much more information and news about it today than there was 15 years ago, but it doesn't seem as though there's been enough being done about it, enough change, especially as we said, this story about Marines photo sharing has
right.
come to light. It seems like it's just kind of gone more underground, if you will.
Right. Awareness is great. I think in the last 15 years, we've done that. People recognize now that military sexual violence, sexual assault and sexual trauma is an enormous issue, but we haven't gotten anywhere past that. And that's what we need to do.
Lynn, thank you so much for joining us. Good luck to you.
Thank you so much.
My guest is Lynn K. Hall, and we've been talking about her book, Caged Eyes, an Air Force cadet's story of rape and resilience. It's the first full-length memoir account of rape in the U.S. military. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. You can also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.